Welcome to Lawyerpreneur, where we discuss the alternate paths that allow lawyers to engage their entrepreneurial spirits, connect their creativity to their careers, and distinguish themselves from others. I'm your host, Jeremy Richter. This episode is brought to you by ALPS, Legal Malpractice Insurance Made Easy. As the largest direct writer of lawyers' malpractice insurance, ALPS provides outstanding insurance products, claims handling by licensed attorneys with private practice backgrounds, and risk management resources to help your firm be successful. ALPS understands that being a lawyer is hard, and they want to help make it a bit easier. Their online application takes as little as 20 minutes to complete, so you can get back to what really matters. To find out more, visit alpsinsurance.com. Now, on to the interview.
Todd Smith is a lawyer in Butler Snow's Austin office. He has an appellate practice in which he represents businesses and individuals in both the Texas Supreme Court and the Fifth Circuit. He is one of two hosts of the Texas Appellate Law podcast. Jody Sanders is a partner with Kelly Hart in Fort Worth. He has both a trial and appellate practice and regularly writes and speaks on appellate issues. Jody is the other host of the Texas Appellate Law podcast. And my co-host today is MC Sangaila, who brought us all together for this conversation. She's been on prior episodes. She has, as we sit here and record this, recently launched the Portia Project, a podcast in which lawyers who are women are interviewed. So you should definitely check that out. And I'm feeling really comfortable talking to my people from Texas today. So I may drop in some howdies and y'alls, and my East Texas drawl may come in. So first, howdy, and let me welcome y'all to Lawyerpreneur.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we appreciate it, Jeremy.
All right, let me start with this. Whose idea was Texas Appellate Law podcast, and tell me the story behind it getting off the ground?
Well, I think the answer is it almost started as a little bit of a joke with a grain of seriousness in it. I kind of made a joke on Twitter about wanting to start a podcast, and Todd, who I didn't really know other than we followed each other on Twitter, said, are you really serious? Are you interested? And I wasn't. I thought, okay, it's intriguing, but I hadn't really sat down and actually put pen to paper about the idea. And then Blake Hawthorne, who is the clerk of the Texas Supreme Court and just an incredible resource, said, you know, hey, if you guys are serious, let me know. I'd love for you to come down and we'll set you up at the Texas Supreme Court. You can do your first episode here. I'll get you one of the judges as a guest. And so Todd and I talked offline, and he had thought about doing one, but thought, you know, this is probably too much for one person. And I, having done it now, he's absolutely right, I think, with the way that we wanted to do it. And so we thought, well, let's give it a shot. And so that's kind of how we got started. And I'll let Todd take a turn filling in the blanks on this.
Yeah. Just to add to that, I mean, I had seriously considered it for a few years. I was a law blogger and had always kind of enjoyed tinkering around with technology and figuring out how to use it to market my practice. And so a podcast kind of seemed like the next logical thing to do, but I started looking into it, and you know, I'm generally not afraid to dive in with both feet when I commit to something, but the idea of doing that on my own, I just couldn't get over sort of the intimidation factor and the need that, you know, I still needed to practice law for a living and couldn't really devote as much time to that as I thought it was going to take. And so when Blake kind of paired Jody and me up, we thought about it, and it was like, well, we can share the responsibility. And so it made it a lot more or a lot less daunting. And so we just kind of decided, well, we're going to just kick it off and start recording before we even really knew what we were doing. And we just kind of had a rough template for where we thought it might go. And it took off. And now I think this week or next week, we're going to release our 90th episode or so. So it's been great. And it just kind of took on a life of its own after a while. And now we've got it humming along like a fairly well-oiled machine.
Well, that's so I'm sorry. I just have to interject because I learned something. So it was born on Twitter.
It was.
Yep.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So that's pretty cool. So appellate Twitter becomes appellate podcasting. That's pretty cool. And
you know, MC, if you were ever on Twitter, you might already know this.
I might. See, that's yes, that's right. That is my gap in social media and electronic stuff, is that I'm not on Twitter. I think because of the factor that you mentioned at the beginning, which is that would be a whole bunch of work, like to stay on it and do it the way I probably think I would do it. I just don't want to dip my toe in it, because I think it would be just way too deep, especially since that's where appellate folks really seem to hang out and have, you know, created a really nice community. So on the one hand, I'm missing out. On the other hand, that's another thing on top of all the other stuff that we do. So was Blake Hawthorne also on Twitter, and is that how he connected you, or did he reach out aside from Twitter? That's my question too.
I had actually had a conversation with Blake before we started talking about connecting with Jody. And he made the same offer to me when I was just considering doing a podcast on my own. And I was not smart enough to take Blake up on it, or maybe I was smart enough not to take him up on it, because I honestly couldn't say if I had decided to do it and tried to do it then. I can't say necessarily that whatever podcast I conceived of before Jody would have survived. I mean, you know, I was a sole practitioner trying to maintain a practice, and I can totally see, you know, me starting off with the best of intentions, but then things get busy, you know, COVID happens, and next thing you know, it kind of goes by the wayside. So I'm thankful to Blake, you know, who he's kind of a pot stirrer. I mean, he'll connect people, and it really worked out great that I waited. And I'm grateful that Jody and I have this arrangement where we're co-hosting, and it's just worked out really well.
Yeah. So I think Blake is known as a connector. I think I would put it that way.
He is, and he is on Twitter, and the offer that he made to us was on Twitter. And if anyone who practices in Texas, or anyone in general who wants to know more about how appellate courts work, he's just a great resource. He's kind of the public face, I think I would say, these days of the Texas Supreme Court. And he just gives all kinds of great information and insight through his Twitter account. So he's a great person to follow.
Yeah. And I would say in Texas as well, I would say that's a very robust participation on social media and technology wise, both by the judges and by practitioners. I think that is a really good cross-section that pre-existed before you had the podcast, which made people feel both, I think, comfortable being on the podcast and also had an ecosystem that the podcast could kind of become part of and join. And I'm sure that had some impact. I don't know how you guys perceive it. But before we go on, I want to ask one context question, which is, so you conceived of this and started recording this before COVID lockdowns hit. Is that correct? Because most podcasts, legal podcasts in particular, were, you know, kind of late adopters. We're all shut down, and we can't meet each other anyway. So let's do a podcast. But yours preceded that.
No, that's right. And you know, it's funny. We recorded our first episode the first week of March 2020. I came down to Austin. I'm in Fort Worth. Todd's in Austin, which for non-Texas people is about 200 miles apart.
Yep.
And so we had talked, how are we going to do this? And Todd said, well, there's this thing called Zoom. And so, you know, we could do some in person, and we could do this thing called Zoom where you basically log on and do video calls. And I said, okay, sure. Sounds great. So we went down, we recorded our first two episodes there. I went out of town on spring break the next week. And then all of a sudden everything changed. And then it turned out, I mean, for us, it kind of was a little bit of a bonus that we didn't expect, because all of a sudden, every judge, every lawyer in the state of Texas suddenly had a lot of time on their hands and a Zoom account. And so We just said, all right, we're going to go full force. We're just going to mine this for whatever we can get out of it. And Twitter really was great, because we already had a ton of judicial and appellate contacts in and outside of Texas. And so we just started sending people messages and said, hey, do you have an hour to come get on Zoom? And they all did. And so that's kind of how we got our start, luckily enough.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we had, I think, unexpected success in getting guests, good guests to come on our podcast. It really, I think, helped give us some credibility that Blake had set us up with Justice Jeff Boyd, and we recorded with him in the courtroom. He was a great sport for a first interview. And I think, you know, I go back and listen to that episode sometimes. I think we did remarkably well, considering we didn't have any idea what we were doing. And we've just kind of, you know, sprung forth off of that. And we've had, you know, many judges, not only other Texas Supreme Court justices, but some Court of Appeals justices, Fifth Circuit justices, and I think two or three at least from outside the Fifth Circuit, some of which you were involved in, MC. So it's really been a great opportunity for us to just visit with people, not only limited to Texas lawyers and judges, but to kind of do some compare and contrast with other jurisdictions. And we've, you know, I'm kind of a technology nut, and I also enjoy having people on the podcast like Ross Guberman and Jackie Schaefer and some of the folks mm-hmm. that are really in the technology space, the legal technology space, to talk about what they see is going on in our industry. So it's really, you know, we do not limit ourselves to topics directly related to Texas appellate matters. If we did, we'd have, you know, the Texas appellate Twitter contingent would be about all that would ever listen to us.
Mm-hmm. It's much more broad based. Yeah. It's good.
We've had the good really fortune of reaching a much larger number of people. I think I checked our numbers this morning, and actually we're almost at 35,000 total downloads at this point. So it just keeps, the listenership just keeps growing. We mm-hmm. couldn't be happier with how it's gone.
Well, it's a very high level, you have very high level guests, and it's a very high level discussion. So I think that is what distinguishes the program just from the get-go. And also encourages more high-level people to participate. So it just kind of snowballs. And as to Jackie Schaefer and Ross Guberman, awesome companies, I have to give them a shout out too. both Briefcatch and Clear Brief are often used by appellate judges and appellate lawyers. And I will say both of whose companies are sponsoring Porsche Project Podcast. So I'm very pleased about that too. Mm-hmm.
I talked to Jackie, I think it was last week. And I mentioned to her that I'd seen that you had managed to secure Clear Brief as a sponsor. I did not hit her up to sponsor the Texas Appellate Law Podcast, but if she listens to this, you know, maybe we should have a conversation. Right.
So I really like that this was born on social media the way it was for a couple of reasons. One is I spoke on a panel with another lawyer about my same age last year to a group of managing partners of law firms. And our presentation was about the use of social media by lawyers for marketing and branding purposes. And I mean, this just really speaks to that. And not only the birth of a podcast, but if you're like me, so I started this podcast, I think the first episode went out the last day of March, 2020. So y'all were a couple of weeks ahead of me. But the community of people and the network of people that I have developed out of this, that I wouldn't have had an opportunity to speak with or connect with otherwise, because I wouldn't have had a platform that led to it, has been really significant. And it wasn't intended to necessarily grow my law practice and client base, but I have gotten business out of it, out of the connections that I've made here. Has your podcast, the platform that you've built, the networks that it's facilitated, had any direct effect on your law practices?
I think the answer is yes. And I guess it depends on what we mean by direct effect. I certainly, through social media and I think visibility, I have gotten calls from people that I probably wouldn't have before. And then I think just in general, just in terms of expanding the network, like you said, it absolutely has. I've gotten to meet people from all over the United States doing the podcast that I never would have come in contact with. And so now, you know, if we happen to be traveling somewhere, maybe I'll have a lunch or a coffee with somebody that our paths never would have crossed, but for either the podcast or social media. In fact, you know, Todd and MC, I think, count as two of those people. You know, MC, I wouldn't have ever probably crossed paths with you practicing appellate law in California and me here in Texas. And even Todd being in the same state, I mean, I'd been practicing appellate law for 14 or 15 years before I met Todd, even though we do the exact same thing in the same state. And so I think it definitely has expanded those horizons. And it it just is a, it's an easy icebreaker. You know, if someone listens to the podcast and they come up and say, hey, I love your podcast, then it's like, great. We have something we can talk about now for a long time, as much as they want to talk about it, which usually is not as long as I want to talk about it, but.
I, you know, measuring ROI for social media or for podcasting is a little tricky. It's really hard to say that you got some piece of business directly as a result of your participation in either of those things. But the one thing that is just undoubtable is that you're putting yourself out there, and you're exposing your personality and your practice and your ability to think and speak at least, you know, somewhat well, to just an audience of people who otherwise would never hear that. And so, I mean, if you go like I've done for many years and give talks to other appellate lawyers, I mean, that's not really the way that you connect yourself with people who are ultimately going to send you business. You have to venture outside of your comfort zone a little bit. And so that's what podcasting really has been for me, is especially over COVID times when we really couldn't go out and meet and greet and shake hands and at bar functions and all the things that I've typically done to kind of get myself out there. It's been sort of a substitute for that. And, you know, the old marketing line is you need to have people know you, like you, and trust you to hire you. And to me, there's really no better way of putting yourself out there than having conversations like this that, you know, you not only can feature someone like MC, who's been a guest on our show, but people see you and your ability to carry on that conversation and hopefully have those high level discussions somewhat intelligently. And so it definitely has impacted my practice. You know, my practice transitioned in over the last year from I was a sole practitioner to now being in a larger firm. But the firm was super interested in what I was doing with the podcast and has been really gracious about helping us. You know, we've got now this whole marketing group that is available to us to help us with it and handles a lot of the production stuff. So in addition to sharing duties with Jody, I'll tell you, Jeremy, another thing that's made it easier for me is going into a firm that was really supportive of it and has helped in every way with putting it on. And so I have nothing but good things to say about podcasting. I think the circumstances have to be right, though, because what is it they say? You know, if you make it past 6 or 7 episodes of a podcast, you're way more likely to actually make it, because there's gobs out there that didn't make it that far.
Well, and that's where I was headed next is, you know, you mentioned that doing it solo and have running a law practice earlier, you were saying how difficult that would have been. And I can speak to that because I basically took 6 months off from this podcast at the end of summer and fall and into the winter, because my litigation schedule just got crazy and I was changing firms and everything was just kind of nuts. But going back to what you're saying here, you know, if you make it past 10 episodes, you're in it after that, because most podcasts fail before you get to that point, because of the work, because of everything that, you know, it requires. So what gave y'all the staying power to last now into your into the 90s episodes? I'm sure you've got at least 100, you know, you're coming up on that, and that's something to look forward to. So when things, you know, when the grind got to you, when things were going crazy, what gave you the staying power to stick with this medium and keep pushing it forward?
I think, in some respects, timing just was on our side, because when COVID hit, we had a Zoom account. We kind of knew what we were doing, and people had a lot of time on their hands, as did we, because all of a sudden there's no trials. There's really no live appellate arguments. Everything just kind of stopped. And so it just turned out that we had time. All our guests had time and access to Zoom. And so we just said, we're just going to crank out as many as we can. And so until, I guess, January of this year, we were putting out an episode every week and had been since March of 2020, which was a lot. But looking back, it didn't necessarily feel like a lot, because I think everybody was at home. You know, we all had a lot of spare time and not that many places to go. There weren't trips. There weren't in-person conferences, any of that. And so that was a little bit of an unexpected benefit, I think, for us, just because we had the time and everyone else did to sit down and do it. And then once we had done it, I don't know, I really don't remember when I feel like we kind of got the rhythm down, but I feel like after 15 or 20 episodes, we really sort of got the rhythm down and then figured out the format that we liked, figured out how to make it work. And then Todd on the tech side has kind of idiot proofed it for us a little bit, which is makes it nice. You know, we have an automated sign up. They go in, they pick their scheduling date. It sends them a link. It sends them automated emails. It sends us a calendar invite. So we're not spending a lot of time on the front end getting people in and getting all the scheduling done. And so by the time we sit down to record, one of us decides who's going to take the lead for the episode. We'll put together an outline of kind of generally the topics that we want to cover. And then we just chat for an hour, 45 minutes to an hour, and see where it goes. And sometimes we stick to the outline pretty heavily. Sometimes it goes in directions that we would never have expected. And so I like that. You know, when we first started, we didn't really know how it was going to be, but I think we figured out pretty quickly that the way that works best for us is just finding good guests and letting them tell their stories rather than trying to talk about us. Or, you know, we do some substantive topics. We've had several episodes about substantive issues in Texas law, federal law, that kind of stuff. And I think we'll continue to do that, but it's not really so much a technical podcast where we talk about, you know, this case or that case and the impact of that. It's more, here's just kind of generally a topic and here's a person who's an expert or a thought leader in that. And let's just hear what they have to say.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. I mean, if we were trying to closely script our episodes, it would be a lot harder. So much of what makes it work is not only switching off with, you know, the responsibilities of securing guests and all that, but also switching off on the primary hosting for an episode, taking the lead. You know, we both participate actively in every episode, but they're, you know, if Jody says, "Hey, I'd like to have so-and-so on the podcast," and they're, you know, this is their topic, I'm all for that. And if I know something about it too, then it makes for a really lively conversation. And if I don't, I follow along and ask questions. And we never struggle to fill the time. I mean, if anything, we tend to go longer than we originally set out to do. In fact, when we first started, we were thinking, oh, you know, 30 minutes is a good time, is a good amount of time for an episode. We actually had some people tell us on Twitter, you know, you really need to go a little longer. You don't get a chance in 30 minutes to really get into the depth of the topic. And so we did that, and it's worked out really great for us. I think one thing that has likely given us staying power going forward is a decision to kind of back off of the every week schedule because, you know, we did have to pay some attention to what we had in the can recorded. Because if we didn't want to have breaks and episodes releasing, we had to have something on tap every week. And now the turnaround time for production, we still have, you know, several episodes recorded in advance, but we have a lot longer timeline in terms of getting our schedule and making sure that we meet our calendar that we want to meet. And so we've never had trouble finding guests. That has never been an issue. We've been very fortunate there. And now, you know, when we first made this switch, I mentioned to Jody, I was like, you know, this means we're only recording about 25 or 26 episodes a year. That's really not very many when you think about it. A calendar fills up pretty fast.
Yeah. And I can really identify with that because when I brought the podcast back in January of this year, I made the conscious decision of doing every other week because trying to do 40 or 50 episodes was just too much of a commitment with everything else going on. And so I think one of the important takeaways is when you're set out on a creative endeavor, you have to make it sustainable. And making it sustainable is sometimes doing less, but doing more within that limited capacity.
Yeah,
guys, regular publishing of whatever it is you're doing, if it's, you know, email marketing or a newsletter or blog posts or podcasts, you know, anybody can be a flash in the pan and can do something, you know, really intensely for a short period of time. The ones that succeed are the ones that have that staying power and show up time and time again. And that's how you develop a following, is for people to be able to know, oh, you know, hey, it's Thursday. There's going to be a new Texas Appellate Law podcast episode. And I mean, almost to the point where when we were publishing weekly, if we were going to be a little late in publishing our episode, I felt obligated to apologize to our Twitter followers, to say, hey, episode's coming, you know. But it's the interesting thing about making that change, though, Jeremy, that I think does make it more sustainable for us long term, is our numbers have stayed constant. We have not lost any number of downloads. We're still on the same pace. The curve is still actually going upward, even though our content is a little less frequently released. So, you know, I think if you develop, you start off and you develop that listenership, they're going to stick with you, you know, even if you make a slight adjustment. So it's really worked out great for us. And so we're looking forward to continuing on into the future.
Yeah, so I'm glad to get some wisdom from all of you as the newbie podcaster. I think I've already committed two errors based on your statements. One is I'm doing it myself. Second of all, I'm doing it every week, at least for the next year. But anticipating some of these issues, I batch recorded a ton of things before I even launched the podcast. So I have like months of interviews already done. And then, you know, try to batch record the rest, the front end part of the year, so that when everything breaks loose, that I'm certain I have at least a year's worth of podcast ready to go, you know, the first part of the year. I think that's how I'm sort of solving that issue, but it's challenging doing like that many interviews, you know, in short bursts. But I think listening to you as well, I'm thinking that, you know, what do I enjoy like about your podcast and Jeremy's podcasts? And I enjoy the genuineness and the authenticity that you bring and that your guests bring in return. I also think that you create your own ecosystem in that moment. You have a really great rapport and you have a connection with people that I think, Todd, you and I couldn't even have at a bar function. You have a depth of discussion with people that you wouldn't have if you were at a bar conference or speaking at a bar conference. It gives you a deeper connection to people that as guests that you wouldn't easily be able to have in the corollary experience of speaking on a bar panel. And then the second thing is I think I just really enjoy being able to meet other people like you who are, you know, thinking outside the box and doing some really exciting stuff that we wouldn't otherwise have met. And I think that we create a system amongst all of us as podcasters to support each other in a really tangible way, whether it's through our podcasts or in other things. If any of us needed anything, you know, we're pretty responsive to each other. A sense of connection and support and loyalty that I think that goes far beyond what people would say is like, you know, networking.
I think that's absolutely right. We had Carl Ciceri, who's an appellate lawyer in Texas, on, and Carl is kind of a super networker, and he has his own small firm. And he talked about, you know, for him, when he decided to go out on his own, one of the things he did was just go anywhere he could and have a meal with somebody that he thought might be helpful to him. And really for us, this was kind of the COVID equivalent of that. You know, you couldn't just go somewhere and meet somebody for lunch, but hey, here's a space where we can just sit and talk for an hour with somebody that we don't know about something that interests us. And it's been great. I mean, there's not an episode that I don't walk away learning something. And that's one of my absolute favorite parts of it, because for me, being a lifelong learner is just one of my favorite things. And this is a great way to get perspectives from people that even people that I know fairly well. Some of my friends have come on the podcast, and there's always some nugget that comes out that I think, huh, I never knew that about that person or their area of practice. Or, you know, our tradition is to end with a tip or a war story. And some of those are the most interesting confessions that you get from people, because you hear about something from their practice or their life.
Yeah. And to the marketing angle, one of the things that we talked about recently is maybe going back and repurposing some of those tips and war stories into other content. You know, it's not when you put out a podcast, it's not necessarily a one-off. It really shouldn't be. If you're doing it right, and there are things that we've, I think, not done right, MC, don't worry. You're still early in the process. But, you know, if someone's going to start a legal podcast, one thing that they ought to be thinking about is ways that their content can serve other purposes. And so one of the things that was important to us was that we wanted to publish transcripts of our episodes, because that, you know, gives it the power of Google to be able to find the content. And that's not something you get with strictly an audio podcast. The other thing that we do that we really haven't done much with yet, but this is where I'm getting into the tips and war stories, is I would really like to take the last 5 minutes, however long that those tips and war stories typically take of our show, take the Zoom clip, package it into a video, and publish it on YouTube. And I've talked to our marketing folks about that. I think, you know, they're super excited about it. And the beautiful thing about having help with this, MC, is I won't be the one to have to do it. As much as I enjoy tinkering around with video and all that, it's, you know, it's not the highest and best use of my time, especially during the workday. So, you know, we're looking at things like that. Of course, to all our past listeners out there, don't worry, we'll clear it with you first before we put your Zoom video out there on the internet. That includes you, MC.
Oh, I'm sure that you will consult me before that happens. Yeah. yes. And that's interesting, because I'm trying to learn to do the same thing on mine, and that I have, you know, podcast website, we have the transcripts already up there, and I don't have the videos yet, but we will have a video version and an audio version together. And that, you know, mm-hmm. So you have options. And then, but my video is going to be embedded privately on Vimeo so that no one can grab it. No one can do anything. I want to keep things comfortable for the judges so that nobody can pull it or take anything out of context. It seems like you the safest that behind, way.
Like a sign up where you have to like log in and access it.
No, you can, it'll only be embedded in my website. And you can't pull it or go, you know, or go to correct. Okay. So that you might think about that for the video part, especially since you have a lot of judges. And then I have clips along the lines of what you're talking about. I don't have the video clips yet, but I have short little clips from the each episode with a little animation, maybe like a minute clip that Crafty Council put together for me, which is actually a great outfit out of the UK, who I met through LinkedIn during COVID. They generally do marketing for and serve an in-house community, but they're brilliant and very creative. And so I asked them to do those clips. So I think one of the things I've learned is getting a good team together, and that team may not all be in one location. And as far as I'm concerned, it may not be in a legal realm at all or a law firm at all, because if you're looking outside of that, both for design or for website creation or the video clip part, it might be that you don't want a traditional, you know, legal marketing background to do that. If you want to kind of break out of the mold a little bit and apply some other design aspects to the law.
So one of the things I liked about a turn we took a second ago was talking about networking, and there's been talk about, you know, in-person meetings, which has kind of fallen away and started to come back now, and conferences and that. One of the things that having a podcast has done for me is that I am a born introvert and would take a book in a corner over a group of people every day, all day. But what podcasting has done for me is that, like, the thing about big groups like that and conferences is the small talk, which I'm very bad at and don't enjoy. But where podcast distinguishes itself from that is that while I may be on a, you know, call with folks that I don't know, it is a topic-based conversation or a controlled conversation where we have something particular that we're engaging with. And it's not just me trying to figure out how to talk about whether they like the Dallas Mavericks or watched the Super Bowl or how the weather is and all that. it's really controlled, and I find it a lot less taxing than trying to engage in other ways. So for me, it's sustainable in that way as well, because it's a kind of marketing, a kind of branding that I can do over the long haul that doesn't take a lot of energy out of me that I have to recuperate from where other kinds of things do.
100% yeah, agree.
Yeah, that's a really good. That's a really good point too. Even as Introverts the conferences unite. Come back, right?
That's
yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, we started an appellate lawyer podcast, so obviously our target audience and guests are all introverts, which is, for the reasons you just said, has worked out great because it is a safe space. And you know, when you get people talking about the things that they have expertise in or passion for, it's really easy to have a conversation.
Yeah. And I think I've said this before, or actually you and I talked, Jeremy, about this, that there, it's surprising like what skills are most sort of MVP or most valuable skills for podcasting. And I think you would think at first that like talking and being, you know, unabashed about talking is a good thing, but actually listening is the most important thing. Your job as the host is to facilitate the guest in drawing them out and bringing information to the table. Maybe even, as Jody, you mentioned, information from someone you know really well that you didn't even know that experience happened to them. So making them feel comfortable enough to do that and listening, increasing the listening skills. I mean, already as introverted types, we're pretty good at that, but you know, you're really enhancing that. And I think, Jeremy, for you, showing how good you are about that, like how sensitive you are to people and following conversations and following up, but also planning ahead, it's got to be something that clients would really appreciate. You know, your whole demeanor in that way, it shows through your podcast hosting. The same thing with you, Todd and Jody. So it's a nice, you know, it's a nice showcasing of talents that I would say are maybe a little quieter.
But, and I'll tell you too, when I am editing the audio for the podcasts and I'm looking at, you know, all the sound waves and all that, and I see where an interview has me asking a 20-second question and then the audio shows like a 4-minute answer, like, okay, this was a good interview because I didn't do much in it other than ask questions that people responded to and just let them go.
Well, yeah, I've noticed that I tend to ask multifarious questions. You know, you do pay attention to your interviewing style, doing this for a while. And it's like, well, wait a minute. You know, there's a balancing act between you as the host doing too much talking versus letting the guest kind of go on. And this goes back to the idea of you're really trying to feature the guest. You know, if the podcast is about you, then you don't need guests on your podcast. Jody and I have done some guestless episodes, and I mean, they're fun when we do them, but we really haven't done them in quite a while because we have so much more fun when we have a guest on.
I was going to ask you about those, because I've seen those and I'm like, are those weird to do when you have the host as opposed to like, okay, now we're going to talk for a few minutes about something, or do you enjoy them for different reasons? I'm just curious about that.
I think they're fun for different reasons. I mean, we usually do it with a pretty discreet topic. And we know what we're going to do. And it's usually something that one or both of us knows a lot about. So it's not, we don't have to flounder too much. And typically those tend to be our shorter episodes. You don't find us going for an hour on whatever that topic is, but we've done them and they're fun. And we'll probably do some in the future too, but we've been very lucky to have an abundance of guests. So we haven't needed to do one in a while.
Yep.
One of the things you talked about, I think this will probably bring us to toward it, the close of this, is building an audience, growing your audience of listeners, and you know, bringing topics that they're interested in. Aside from having topics that fit within their expectations that you've set and having interesting and engaging guests, have there been steps that you've taken? What have you done to kind of help facilitate and grow your audience?
I was going to say, we really have tried to leverage social media as much as possible, particularly since we got our start during COVID. And so both, I think, in promoting our podcast and in selecting guests that we know that also may have a good social media following, I think it's leveraged our contacts in ways that we probably couldn't. And for a while we were doing Facebook, and I think we still do some, but we just didn't have as much interest on Facebook, I think, because it's more of a social community than a professional community. You know, Twitter has tons of appellate lawyers, probably, Jeremy, for a lot of the reasons like your podcast, you know, when you're interacting in 240 character discussions and you can kind of moderate when and how you do that, I think that that attracts appellate lawyers. And so there's a lot of appellate lawyers and judges on Twitter, which gives us a natural audience. We've used LinkedIn some. I know MC uses LinkedIn a lot. So I think that, and then I think as we've gotten out there more, you know, speaking at conferences, if I speak at a CLE, I always kind of put a plug in like, hey, I've got this out there. We'd love to know if you want to be a guest or you have a topic, reach out. And so I've gotten a couple of hits doing that. And so I think it's just kind of intentionally finding the channels to get it to the people we think will be interested. Because obviously, you know, average person off the street doesn't care anything about the Texas Appellate Law podcast. In fact, I threaten my kids if they're getting too loud that I'm going to turn it on in the car. So, you know, we've tried to be very targeted and intentional about how to get to the people that we know are going to want to listen to it.
And yeah, and I'll add to that just by saying we've also experimented with some different things. And MC knows about some of this. We have done some Clubhouse rooms, and we've also, I think we've kind of settled on Twitter Spaces as our other publishing channel. And we've kind of taken a little bit of a hiatus from that. But what we really like to do is what's really fun is when we do what we call a refresh, which is we'll have a past guest come into a Twitter space with us. We'll publicize it on social media in advance and bring that person in for a live conversation on Twitter Spaces. And the great thing about it is that the audience people, the listeners can tune into that and participate in that and can actually engage with our former guests directly if we filter them and allow them to actually make that connection. And we've had some really great conversations with some of our former guests in that format that I think really kind of adds just another layer to the whole process. So, you know, it's kind of like just with marketing in general, you have to sort of try new things until you find the thing that works. And so Twitter obviously is a great platform for us to be on and to continue to use in all forms. But the Spaces is really one of my favorite things that we've done to follow up. And, you know, it's again about repurposing. It's reaching the audience in whatever the platform is that they're using. And so the plug in a CLE talk is great. People like, as with Jody, if I'm out somewhere, you know, it's very common for me to get questions about the podcast, and mostly MC, it's how do you find time to do that? And Jeremy, you probably have the same experience.
Absolutely. All right. So y'all are obviously on Twitter. So tell people how to find you, connect with you, and be able to find and keep up with the podcast.
Sure. Well, the podcast has its own Twitter account, and it's at texapplawpod.com. And my Twitter handle is just my name with my first initial, D. Todd Smith is my Twitter handle.
And I'm at Jody, J-O-D-Y-S, Sanders. So two S's in there. And then texapplawpod.com is the website for the show as well. And it's got all our past episodes, but I think we're on every major podcast app anyway. So, you know, Apple, Spotify, you know, any of the ones that you like, if you just search for us, you can find us there.
All right. Well, thanks so much. I really enjoyed the conversation. I enjoyed talking kind of the inside baseball of all this. And MC, thanks for coming on and co-hosting it. And I look forward to talking to you all again.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thanks for having us, Jeremy. Good to see you, MC.
Yeah, good to see you.
If you've enjoyed the show, you can support it by rating it on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is you're listening, and make sure to subscribe so you don't miss anything. You can also support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/lawyerpreneur. Thanks for listening.